You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Live from Chicken Town, this is the Flopcast, episode 351.
It goes floppity, floppity, floppity.
Yes, yes, hello, Cornflake.
Kevin, hi.
You're out there somewhere, right?
I am.
We're on Skype tonight. You're not actually here in the studio with me.
Which means somebody has to drink my iced coffee, and I delegate you.
That's a rare Flopcast Skype show, but here we are.
Of course.
This was just sort of a weird scheduling thing.
Yeah, weird scheduling things happen.
The deal today is Aresia was this past weekend, and our plan was for this week's show to be about Aresia, the big Boston science fiction convention. However, due to our scheduling mishaps, we're pushing out the Aresia show to next week, so you and I are just kind of doing a regular goofy fill-in episode for this week.
We'd like to say hello, though, to all of our new Aresia listeners. Hello!
The thousands and thousands of new listeners, new friends that we made at Aresia. Yes, welcome to you all.
Hi.
We'll get into Aresia in detail next week. That's the plan. This week, we just have a few miscellaneous silly things. So let's start as we always do. Cornflake, what is National Whatever Day?
National Whatever Day!
Kevin, you know who is celebrating a birthday on January 27th as this show is coming out?
Wow, I have no idea. I'm going to say Billy Ocean. Is it Billy Ocean?
I actually don't know whether or not Billy Ocean has a birthday. Does he have a birthday?
He has no birthday. He was never born. He's just always been here.
Yes, he's the ever-existent Billy Ocean, so I don't think birthdays even apply to him.
He came mysteriously rising up out of the ocean at the dawn of time. All right, Cornflake, whose birthday is it?
Well, Patton Oswalt. Kevin, he's turning 50 years old.
Okay, yeah, we love Patton Oswalt.
Yeah, we do.
What can you tell me about Patton Oswalt?
Well, I know pretty early in his career he worked as a writer for Mad TV, and more recently he's the voice of Nom Nom, which is one of the characters on We Bare Bears. And let's not forget King of Queens, he was Spencer Olchin on that show.
I've never seen any of the things you just mentioned. I've heard of them.
Have you at least seen Ratatouille?
Yes, I did see that once, and he was the star of that, right? He was the rat.
Yes, he's the rat. Remy.
He's on Mystery Science Theater 3000 now as well, of course, where he is TV's son of TV's Frank, which means he's working with our pal Grant.
That is so cool. I have to make a guilty confession at this point, so I have never seen Ratatouille. I need to get to that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I'm shocked. I think the first time we went to the Wilbur Theater, after they converted it into a comedy club, it was to see Patton Oswalt.
Neat.
He did one of his signature bits is complaining about the weird, disgusting things that they sell at Kentucky Fried Chicken.
You can't argue with any of that.
And I don't spend a lot of time in Kentucky Fried Chicken, so I don't know what's going on in those places anymore. I was in a Kentucky Fried Chicken like 2 years ago because we went to the Big Chicken in Atlanta. There's a Kentucky Fried Chicken in the Atlanta, Georgia area, which is shaped like a giant chicken. And our friends took us there because we just had to visit this famous, it's like a landmark, the Big Chicken. And that's the last time and the only time in many, many years that I've been inside a KFC. So I'm not too familiar with the crazy stuff that they serve that Patton Oswalt has built entire stand-up routines about.
Yeah. So, on that note, happy 50th birthday.
On that big chicken-themed note, yes, happy birthday, Patton. Excellent. What else are we covering today? I've been out a couple of times this week, or in the last couple of weeks, I guess. Yeah, well, if I sound extra sleepy right now, I was out pretty late last night because of the moth. You know the moth?
Do I know the moth? I listen religiously every week.
We've talked about these storytelling shows. This is one of those deals where people go up on stage and they tell like a true story from their life. And we have a good friend of ours, Matthew Dix, performs at the Moth all the time, and he's one of their champion storytellers. He goes and he wins these Moth competitions, and he runs his own storytelling series down in Connecticut called Speak Up. You and I went to the very first one.
Yeah, do you remember that?
A few years back. And there's a podcast now as well. There's the Speak Up podcast, which Matthew and Alicia host together, and it's excellent. I really look forward to that every week. So if anybody who likes the Moth podcast, you should also be listening to the Speak Up storytelling podcast. Highly recommended. And anyway, just a couple of days ago, I got an invitation from our buddy Matthew Dix to be his guest for a Moth Grand Slam event happening in Boston. So I met up with Matt just last night because he was one of the featured storytellers at this Moth Grand Slam last night. And I didn't know quite how this worked, but what happens is they do these smaller Moth Story Slam events, they call them, and they do these around Boston at smaller venues. They do it at Oberon, where we've been for the burlesque shows.
Yeah.
So if you win one of those Moth Story Slam nights, then you get to also appear in a Moth Grand Slam, and that's what this is last night. So these were the last 10 winners of the various Boston Moth events all come together in a big theater, and these are judged, like, that they somehow select judges out of the audience. So people in the audience, like, hold up numbers like in the Olympics.
Like in the Olympics,
you know.
I didn't know about that part. I listen to The Moth week in and week out, and I never knew about this. I knew the stories were judged, but I didn't.
Yeah, they hold up numbers out of the audience.
I love, love, love listening to The Moth, and I can't imagine having to sit there and decide which story is my favorite, because every story is my favorite for one reason or another. I'd be a terrible judge, Kevin, is what I'm saying.
You'd just be holding up the tens for everybody?
Everybody gets a 10 because I like listening to you.
Yes. Can we have a 10-way tie tonight, please?
You just got to be careful not to hold your number up upside down, or else everybody gets a 1.
That's right. Wow, Cornflake hates everybody. Everybody gets a 0.1.
But she's smiling. She seems to really be enjoying herself. We don't understand.
She's evil. So anyway, check out The Moth, people. If you've never actually heard the show, or certainly if you've never gone to a live event, go ahead and give it a try. It was a lovely evening.
Can you feel the envy through the Skype, Kevin?
Well, you know, it's an attainable goal. You can go out and go to these things. You don't have to be a slacker like me and just wait until they invite you. So maybe we can go to one of those Oberon shows sometime.
That would be excellent.
Check out some live Moth. Anyway, that's what I did last night, and that's why I'm a little sleepy as we speak. But last week, I went to an even weirder show. Here in the Boston area, we were observing the 100th anniversary of the Great Molasses Flood, believe it or not.
I can't even imagine a way to memorialize such an event, and yet you have a friend who figured out how.
Yeah, and we've talked about the Great Molasses Flood on the show, even though it's a horrifying tragedy and we'd like to keep things kind of light around here. Right. The Molasses Flood, I know, came up on the show a year or so ago, and I think it's still not super well known. Even around here, I think a lot of people don't know about it. But the Great Molasses Flood was, there was a giant tank in Boston, and it was built very quickly and very cheaply to hold molasses. Like, this thing held over 2 million gallons of molasses.
Kind of like a big water tank, except with molasses in it?
That's exactly what it was like. It was 50 feet tall. It towered over everything in this neighborhood. This was in the Italian, the North End neighborhood of Boston. But yeah, it was leaking molasses from day one. The, like, kids in the neighborhood would come up to the sides of it to scoop up molasses. And at one point, they just painted the whole tank brown so that it would be less noticeable how molasses were just always running down the sides of it. Uh-huh. It was just ridiculous. And yeah, this thing, one day in January 1919, it exploded, and it was a giant flood, like a giant wave of molasses just went flying down this crowded street in Boston, and people died. It was just an absolute disaster. It sounds absurd. So when people hear about a giant wave of molasses, it's just so crazy that, you know, it just sounds...
Yeah, it sounds like something out of a cartoon.
Yeah, yeah. It just sounds silly. People almost start to giggle when they hear about a giant molasses wave, but it was an absolute catastrophe. There's a great book about it, which I've been reading. I've been meaning to read this book for like 15 years. I finally started since it's the 100th anniversary. So I'm almost through this book, but there's a book called Dark Tide by a guy named Stephen Puglio, which is a very thorough history of the entire molasses flood event. It's really, really fascinating. I recommend that book. Anyway, we talked about the molasses flood a year or so ago because we have friends who have a band, and the name of their band is The Great Molasses Flood.
I haven't had a chance to hear any of their music, Kevin, and every time I hear you bring up this band, I'm just amazed that a band thought to call itself this.
And you've heard a little of their music, at least, because you know our friend Kim.
Yeah, Kim Jennings is amazing.
Yeah, and this is Kim and Dan and Ricardo and Mike are the members of The Great Molasses Flood. They are wonderful. Sort of a folky kind of a band, I would say, sort of acoustic. So they're using acoustic guitars. They use a banjo, a ukulele, a bunch of stuff like that. Some fun percussion. Kim plays the melodica, you know, my favorite instrument.
I've seen her with a picture of her with that melodica. She just looks joyous, as most people with melodicas look.
So The Great Molasses Flood, the band, were able to schedule a concert on the exact 100th anniversary of the actual flood. They did a show at Club Passim, the legendary folk music club in the Boston area. So they actually did a whole bunch of songs. Like, the first half of the show was flood-related songs. Like, they wrote a bunch of songs specifically about the flood, so all these beautiful, sad, you know, molasses flood songs. That was the first half of the show. Second half, then they mixed it up and did some more fun stuff after that. Strangely, we were seated right up front, and a woman seated next to me, we just got to talking, and I mentioned that I knew Kim because she got her start performing at my open mic night. So I used to host an open mic night at a coffee shop in Franklin, Massachusetts. And she just lit up and she said, "Oh, The Grind?"
Oh, wow.
Yeah. She knew The Grind. She knew my old place, my old coffee shop. So that was nice.
That's excellent.
Yeah. Kim got her start in music back in my old open mic way back in the mid-90s. And look at her now. And the other thing about this show is they actually recorded the show to make a live album out of. So at some point we're going to get Great Molasses Flood live album recorded on the 100th anniversary of the flood.
Doesn't get better than that.
I can attest to the fact that it's going to be a really good album because I was there. I heard the whole thing being recorded. They sounded wonderful. So yeah, a very tragic event, but I like that there were actually several things going on in the city that day to commemorate it because it's not terribly well remembered. And I think it should be. It's a bizarre chapter in Boston history, but it's nice that we're acknowledging it, and especially with these friends of ours are making some great music and also remembering the Great Molasses Flood.
Is it true that if you go into the North End on a hot day, you can still catch the faint smell of molasses?
That's what they say, or what they said for many years. I don't think so at this point.
Furthermore, how can you smell it over all the pastry that they're making in that part of town?
I'm telling you, the North End, it's comical. I was there just a few weeks ago, actually. I rarely visit the North End of Boston, but that's considered sort of the Little Italy of Boston. That's the Italian neighborhood.
Yes, everything is delicious. Everything.
You walk around, and it's a very old neighborhood. I mean, Paul Revere's house is there.
Yeah.
Like, that's where Paul Revere lived. So there's all kinds of cool historic stuff everywhere. The actual site of the molasses flood is a park today. So there's really nothing there. There's a baseball diamond, I think, a little league field. There's a plaque that commemorates the site of the flood, and that's about it. So there's really nothing left where the actual molasses tank once stood. The kind of crowded streets, though, of the North End, it looks like a joke. Like, how many Italian restaurants and pastry shops can we cram into this neighborhood? Because it's just one after the other. It's just all Italian restaurants.
You will not stand in a longer line anywhere else in the whole wide world for a cannoli than you will in the North End.
But that was the site of the Great Molasses Flood. And that was one of the weird things that I've been doing the last couple of weeks. So there you go.
That is wonderfully weird, Kevin.
That's what I've been doing. Did you have anything to report back to us? Or should we just see how else we can amuse ourselves tonight?
Let's see how else we can amuse ourselves. I got nothing.
All right, that's fine. I have a couple of things over here. For cool. One thing, people have been clamoring for a second edition of Capes or Apes.
By people, you mean like somebody wrote into the show?
Yes, we actually did get a letter or two regarding Capes or Apes.
Oh, lovely.
How about that? And a letter or two for us is a lot of listener feedback.
Yeah, I'm actually pretty overwhelmed right now. Yeah. That doesn't happen every day for us.
We usually don't get that much feedback. So obviously the people have spoken. They're freaking out over Capes or Apes, our new Flopcast segment for the new year. So we tried it out a few weeks ago. It's still a work in progress. I'm still not quite sure how it's supposed to work. But the basic idea is we're going to randomly determine whether this week we shall discuss capes or apes. And by that, I mean capes referring to superheroes or comic books of any kind, that kind of thing, or apes, which is self-explanatory. Anything related to apes or monkeys would be that category. And so I have a story in either category I have prepared for tonight. I'm going to share one of them with you, depending on which way we're going, capes or apes. We haven't really worked out how to determine which way to go, though, have we?
No.
You said you had an idea. You were working on something. But is that
still... I am working on something. It doesn't work very well without my being there, but I can improvise this evening. We could decide by lobster.
Do you have a lobster over there?
Do I have a lobster?
Now I'm just picturing you on your phone, but while riding atop a giant lobster, stomping around.
And you know, it's funny. That's exactly how things look here. And I don't even have the video up. I don't know how you guessed.
Yeah. All right. So you have a lobster over there that can decide if we're going to do capes or apes?
I have more than one lobster. So hang on a sec. It might get noisy for a second here.
I have no idea what's going on right now. Somehow involves lobsters.
I'll have to take a selfie after the show of me with these lobsters. So I have a red lobster and a blue lobster. And one of them is capes and one of them is apes.
So you have assigned a cape to one and an ape to the other. So should I just call out a color and then you will tell me which I have selected?
The color of the lobster, and that will determine whether we're talking about capes or apes.
All right. Well, the red lobsters traditionally are cooked, and I find a living, running around, screaming crazy lobster way more entertaining, so I'm going to go blue lobster, please.
We are going to go apes.
Apes. All right. So last time we went capes, this time it is apes.
Yes, it is a blue lobster, and the blue lobster calls it apes.
Okay, well, that's good, because the apes subject is a little more timely, I suppose, in that the last two episodes of the Flopcast were our memorial shows.
Yes. I'm still recovering.
Glad we're done with that, right? Yes. Took 2 weeks this time. I hope everybody enjoyed suffering through our annual memorial shows, plural, this time. But I thought those were good shows, though.
Yeah, very tasteful. Very nice.
Yeah. Anyway, there was someone who I was trying to decide whether they should be included in our memorial show. But then I thought, well, this would be appropriate for capes or apes. Someone else who qualifies for the memorial shows for 2018, who we skipped over, was Coco the gorilla.
Oh, yeah.
Remember Coco? This is the sign language gorilla?
Yes.
Coco died this past summer at the age of 46.
That's right.
Which is pretty old for a gorilla. She had a long life.
I probably should be sadder about humans than I am about gorillas, but this one actually makes me really sad.
Oh, well, of course. Everybody kind of loved Coco, and this was like the most famous gorilla. And all our lives, we'd hear about Coco the gorilla that they taught sign language to. There is some debate over how much sign language Coco actually knew. Some years back, I remember that being called into question. I think some of Coco's sign language abilities have been exaggerated by her people.
Her publicists. Well, I bet there are plenty of people out there who have sign language capabilities that are over exaggerated. Hey, I have sign language capabilities. I can sign I love you.
Yeah, I was going to ask you how much sign language you know, because I do not know any. Do you know some sign language?
I once learned a song. I think it was in fourth grade music class, and it was, oh, won't you come with me to my father's house? And we learned the whole thing in sign language.
This was real sign language you learned?
Real sign language, not just like hand motions.
This wasn't like Napoleon Dynamite singing the rose.
I remember this from fourth grade. For father, you take your thumb and make like the brim of a hat across your face. But for fathers, it was the brim of a hat and then an apostrophe. You kind of like do like a little twist at the end for fathers. Yes, these are things that I remember. So that music teacher teaches us, oh, won't you come with me to my father's house? And then ends up going on extended hiatus for some reason. And we get this hip new music teacher who teaches us the next song. And rather than being like an old traditional song, she was the one who taught us "This One's for the Children" by New Kids on the Block for our Christmas pageant. So then we got really hip with the sign language. And of course, that was the one that was way cooler. And I don't remember any of that. I just remember thinking I could sign a New Kids on the Block song.
So at one point you knew a New Kids on the Block song in sign language.
Completely in sign language. Yes.
How has this never come up before?
Well, nobody can watch me sign on this show, so that takes away from some of the interest of it. But I suppose...
Nevertheless, yeah, it would have been good to know.
Bottom line, I think Coco still would have had me licked.
I don't know any sign language. I have spoken while someone else interprets what I'm saying into sign language. That's happened at least a couple of times, like at conventions. If I'm doing a presentation or a panel at a convention, a couple of times there's been a sign language interpreter off to the side of the stage. You see someone frantically gesturing and you realize that that's all based on what I'm saying. You know, it's strange. Right. I'm somehow in control of what this poor person over there has to. And you know me, when I'm at a convention, whatever I'm talking about, it's something ridiculous.
Right.
You know the kind of thing they put me on stage to talk about? You know, she's over there signing about the Star Wars holiday special or something.
Well, anybody who's going to do sign language interpretation for you better know how to sign turkey and chicken and...
Yep. Wookie.
Wookie and... Oh, Fang Face.
Yes, those are the four things I talk about. I should at least learn the sign for Fang Face.
Nothing
that
else.
Could come in handy. So Coco the gorilla, anyway, I don't think Coco knew how to sign for Fang Face. They claimed that Coco knew over 1,000 signs and understood over 2,000 English words. I think that might be an exaggeration, but those were the numbers that are out there on Coco. In any event, Coco was a very, very intelligent gorilla. I know I've seen video recently of Mr. Rogers meeting Coco, which was pretty amazing. A lot of famous people met with Coco over the years.
Well, if I had been famous, I would have loved to have met Coco.
Yeah, Coco and Mr. Rogers seemed to get along quite well. Coco had pets. She had pet kittens.
Aww.
Here's the weird thing about Coco. Coco was also obsessed with nipples.
Yeah?
Yeah. Of any gender, she would she would want to see nipples.
Interesting.
So see, Cornflake, she's just like us. She's just like us. It's what we learned about Coco.
I can't blame her.
Yeah, so anyway, let's keep this short, but that was Capes and Apes. The subject was apes, and the subject was Coco the gorilla.
Yes.
We said goodbye to Coco this past year.
And we only got slightly sidetracked in the process.
I feel like Capes or Apes as a segment is still not where it's going to get to. I feel like it's missing something.
Even after adding lobsters?
Yeah, we're going to get there. We're still working on this.
Okay.
But that's for another time. You had requested that we also throw in some pudding pages tonight, right?
Yes, please. I could totally go for some pudding.
Right before we started recording, we had a special request from Cornflake for the pudding pages. So let me... fire up the computer. You're at a nice safe distance from our supercomputer. You're not here trapped in the studio with this crazy supercomputer.
There's a reason I requested the pudding pages on this particular recording session.
Oh, sure. We're in constant danger here in the studio because of this. You know,
I might feel the reverberations from here if something happens with the supercomputer, but all in all, I'm feeling pretty safe. But, I hope you come out of this okay as well, Kevin.
I'm telling you, not since the molasses flood.
Right.
All right, which book are we doing? We've got the book of stuff from the 70s and 80s. We've got the book of stuff from the 90s. You make the call.
90s.
Going 90s. All right. I have here a book called The Totally Sweet 90s. It's a big book of stuff from the 90s. Whatever number comes up on the supercomputer, that's the page we're going to turn to in the book, and we are legally obligated at that point to discuss whatever is on that page.
Even if we know nothing about it.
Oh, especially if we know nothing about it. We'll just make something up. Cornflake, we are going to page 28. All right, this is a weird one. Early in the alphabet, obviously, because we only turned to page 28, and this is weird, but Cornflake, we've landed on body glitter.
Oh, I forgot that was a thing of the 90s. It seems to have kind of come back into fashion lately.
Yeah? This is not something I know much about.
Oh, that's what you'd like us to think.
So is this something that you and all your wacky friends would apply in the 90s?
Well, it was mostly me, because most of my wacky friends were guys, and
yeah,
they did not rock the glitter. Okay, I would say most of them did not rock the glitter. A few of them did. Mostly, I put it on over my eyeshadow as opposed to going full body with it, because it's kind of like sand in some ways, right? There's certain things you just don't want to get glitter into. So
you spent the 90s with sparkling, glittering eyelids?
I did.
Nice. The book says, in reality, painting the glitter on was the most fun part of the whole exercise. The least fun part was finding little sparkly speckles for days afterwards.
Oh, yeah.
On your jeans, in your bedsheets, and absolutely everywhere else. Can you confirm this?
Yeah. You know, I may still, after all these years, have a few remaining specks on my face.
You still look a little glittery to me. Yes. Yeah, I can confirm this.
I still have a little sparkle left.
It occurs to me I was actually wearing some glitter just a few weeks ago. Accidentally.
Oh.
Yeah.
Sure. Accidentally.
Here's the deal. I received a Christmas card from Panda. You know our friend Panda? You've heard her here on the show a couple of times. We love Panda. Panda sent me a Christmas card. I opened it up, and it was glittery. So the glitter kind of exploded onto me.
Surprise!
I said, Panda, this is great, but now I look like I just got home from a strip club.
The card did it. Really?
Yeah. Do you ever still wear glitter today? Or are you still just waiting to shed the remaining glitter from 20 years ago?
That's just the thing. Well, I think, you know, after tonight's Capes and Apes segment, I owe you a selfie with the two lobsters. And with that, I will wear for you my sparkly lipstick. I just bought some recently. Like, I can't break the habit. I still have a sparkle addiction.
Do you think Coco the Gorilla ever wore body glitter?
Absolutely. There's no doubt in my mind that she was a trendy ape. And that body glitter...
Trendy ape.
For sure. I mean, she lived through the 90s like the rest of us. There's no doubt in my mind. She was one glittery ape.
Excellent. Well, there you go, Cornflake. That takes you back to a more glittery time in your life. Thanks to the magic of the pudding pages, body glitter.
It's the only way we were ever going to discuss body glitter on this show.
Probably. Let's wrap up this goofy little fill-in show of ours right now, Cornflake. Get us out of here.
Well, we may be recording things a little more differently from what we normally do, but everything else is the same, especially where you find us on the internet between shows, and that's at flopcast.net, which is our website, or on facebook.com/flopcast, or on Twitter, where our handle is @flopcast, and even on Instagram. The_flopcast is our handle there.
Yes. Okay, Cornflake, I think the plan for next week is we're going to get you back down here to Chicken Town. Hopefully the mayor's going to join us. And as a team, Team Flopcast, together at last, we're going to break down everything that happened last week at Aresia. That's the plan. Bring some body glitter, and we'll see you there.
Peace and cookies.
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
And I'm Tony Heath.
And we have a sneaking suspicion that you don't actually listen to these promos.
So we're not going to make you listen to one. Bye!
Brought to you by the Watchathon of Rassilon, a podcast where Joe and Tony watch all of Doctor Who and then talk to you about it.
Available on the ESO Network or wherever else you get podcasts from.
But honestly, where else would you go?
WatchYourRassilon.com?
Oh yeah, that makes sense.
Did you know the ESO Network has a brand new Patreon? That's right, we're asking for your help, and you could do it for as little as $1 a month. Don't fret, all your favorite shows will still be available for free as always, but you can get exclusive podcasts and more not heard anywhere else but on our Patreon. To sign for the ESO Network Patreon's easy. All you have to do is go to esopodcast.com and click on the link. With your support of the ESO Network, it's you who will reap the rewards.
Okay, Cornflake, you still out there?
I am.
It's a secret Skype edition of the Secret After Show. What do you have for us today?
I have an explanation for why I'm not out and about as much these days. It's because I have a newfound obsession, Kevin.
Ah.
It's ant farming.
Do you have an ant farm?
If only. I kind of wish. Wait,
you're obsessed with ant farms, but you don't have an ant farm.
Well, let me get
to it. That's the saddest thing I've ever heard.
Well, don't.
You're just wistfully looking at pictures of other people's ant farms?
No, not pictures. It's a YouTube channel, Kevin.
Okay, you're watching.
I'm not alone. This yep. YouTube channel has like 2.6 million followers, and it's called Ants Canada. Have you heard of this before?
No, I've never heard of this before. So now people are watching ants on the internet. I suppose I should not be surprised.
Oh, no. Not just any ants. These are ants with a life story. Like, it is the closest thing that ants will ever come to having for a soap opera. So it's called Ants Canada, but there's a guy in the Philippines, and he has this whole room of just exotic ant farms, and like he has a colony of yellow crazy ants, and there's the fire ants, and they live in the Hacienda del Fuego.
These ants are all in the Philippines?
Yeah, they're in an ant room in the Philippines, but...
Why is it called Canada Ants?
Ants Canada.
Yeah.
Somehow... The concept of the show originated in Canada, but I've only started to learn about this, so I haven't, like, watched back for all the episodes.
For tax purposes, the ants were relocated to the Philippines. Are the ants each named after some Canadian celebrity?
Because that'd be good. That would be hysterical.
That one is named Alex Trebek. That's Anne Murray. That's Michael J. Fox. I know all these ants.
There would be one named Sarah McLachlan.
Yes. We call this ant the lead singer of Triumph. There's a deep cut from the 80s for you.
Wow.
All right. Well, Cornflake, I'm glad you've found something, some new way to occupy yourself. Watching Canadian ants in the Philippines.
I mean, trust me on this. I've totally gone Ants Canada.
All right. Once again, you've shocked and confused me.
Well, isn't that what you have me on the show for?
That's exactly why you're here.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the Tee Public Store, which can all be found at ESONetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.